Do you remember postcards from years ago? Having a wonderful time, wish you were here, with a pretty picture of some wonderful vacation spot? In case you hadn't noticed, we live in a vacation spot. Opportunities for pretty pictures are often available in every direction. A recent transplant to the region figured it out. Barbara Cervone and husband Tony moved to Ashland in 2018. And not long after, Barbara put her writing and photography skills into a blog, Postcards from the Rogue Valley. Blog has now become book, slender and soft cover with many pretty pictures and a bunch of words to help flesh out the stories. Barbara Cervone, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Okay, I think I hear you now. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes, it's Cervone.
Okay, good. All right. Thanks for joining us. Talk about your journey to the Rogue Valley. It sounds like it surprised a few people who know you well.
Yes, it did. Actually, I've spent most of my life on the East Coast. I've lived there really for about 60 years, but I had a brief stay in Southern California, which I love so much that for much of my life, I said that I was a Californian, even though it was kind of an imposter. I ended up here in Ashland 3 years ago when I was visiting my best friend from high school in Los Angeles, who had moved here and kept saying what a wonderful place it was. And I'd heard about the Ashland, the Shakespeare Theater. So I said, let's go take a look. My husband and I had driven across the country on a road trip from Brooklyn. And we were here, and within 3 hours of being here, we said, I think we want to move here. And it was actually the middle of August, smoky as can be, hot as can be, but we were ready to leave Brooklyn, where we were had been living, and suddenly decided this was it. And we returned to Brooklyn, and a few days later, I was looking at real estate here in Ashland, found a house that seemed good, and we bought it sight unseen.
Wow. So, once you guys make a decision, you hold to it, don't you?
Yeah, it was pretty impulsive. And yes, it surprised everyone. So this book or this blog, Postcards from the Rogue Valley, really originated from this feeling that elsewhere our friends, particularly on the East Coast, thought that we had moved to an alternate universe, and that we were gone. I was like, they had disappeared. And so this was partly sort of a statement of, no, we're still here, and this alternate universe has some amazing stories that you need to know about. So that was how it started.
And a blog turning into book then here. I mean, in the book, the natural beauty of the area is talked about first, and then the politics. I mean, Ashland in particular, of all the places in the region, is a bit of a find, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I knew that this was an incredibly beautiful place. Actually, my husband and I sometimes say that, geez, we lived in Brooklyn, we walked out the door, and then we walked underground to a subway that was pretty dirty and pretty chaotic. Mm-hmm. And here we walk out the door, and what do we see? We see, you know, this beautiful expanse of nature. And so we knew that was the case. I think that, and certainly we knew about the Shakespeare Theater, I think that I was not prepared for all the other ways in which Oregon is astounding and sort of confounding, because, in fact, Ashland's a kind of a precious, unique place in the state, in a state which is, you know, again, it has a history of you know, a whites-only state for much of its story. It has these incredible coast, and then my husband and I have spent some time over in Harney County and on the eastern part of the state, and there you even come to something called the Alford Desert, which is just, you know, sand, mm-hmm. as far as you can see. So it's breathtaking in its diversity, and that was something I wasn't prepared for.
Yeah, it is astounding and confounding. I see your point. Barbara Cervone is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the book Postcards from the Rogue Valley, sort of a print version of a blog she had started not long after moving here with husband Tony from Brooklyn in 2018. If you have questions for our guest or have seen the book or have some suggestions, join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. as a resident of 36 years now in the Valley, I mean, it's interesting to read an account, see the photos of someone new to the region, still falling in love with the region. Did you compare notes with any long-timers or get much response to your blog posts?
Well, I certainly have gotten the response I've gotten from my blog posts from people in the Valley or good friends that I've made here is that, so one of the things I did is I was really curious, and I, if you look at these stories, they combine a lot of research behind them, which is something I've done all my life. And so people say to me, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. Or, you know, whether it's Lithia Park, and, you know, I was there and I wanted to capture the fall colors and life there. And then when I went home and started to study more about Lithia Park, I learned about its incredible history when it, you know, was started by the architect, landscape architect from San Francisco named McLaren. And when it was the day that it was sort of inaugurated in the early 1900s, there were 50,000 people showed up for this inauguration.
Which is more than double the population of the town now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I know. It's kind of mind-boggling. Or that it started out as a place where they were these little cabins. There's one that still exists that were these auto parks. It was a place that you could come, you could make a reservation, and then you could park your Model T, I guess, next to one of these cabins deep in Lithia Park. And so I'm constantly stumbling upon those kinds of pieces of information. So I have friends who went and found this. So I've been walking Lithia Park for 15 years, 20 years, and I never knew that that cabin had once been an auto park, whatever. So I think that's the reaction I get from friends here.
Mm-hmm. That they didn't know about the things that you're writing about, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then for me, you know, it's everything about it is a surprise. I think for them, they knew some parts. They knew that, mm-hmm. for example, Lithia Park was a beautiful place to be, but they didn't know history that had made it that way.
There's an interesting entry in Postcards from the Rogue Valley that draws parallels between some regional cures for what ails. You put Lithia water,
right.
And CBD, cannabidiol from cannabis in the same article. CBD's big business now. Tell us about your first reaction to the taste of Lithia water.
I've only done it once. Not something I said, oh, I got to go get more of this. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't pleasant. I mean, it's great to see that people try it.
Yeah, it's very sulfurous water, and yeah, it's not a great taste or, right. or smell for that matter. So have you not gotten into the Ashland mold of tricking tourists into trying Lithia water?
No, I haven't. But again, you know, to me, the story, I mean, those fountains have this incredible story behind them. And again, to, you know, I think people would be surprised to hear that Ashland was a major stop on the Southern Pacific Railroad and was known to be an incredible place because of its lithium water and had all these mineral springs around it. And so people would come here. They say that they would get off the train in their bathing suits, ready to go jump into the nearest mineral spring for its health. And for a while, early 1900s, the town's founders wanted Ashland to be a world-class spa. And they built a great, what was called a natatorium that had two pools. And,
oh, the twin plunges, yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, the twin plunges came after.
Oh, okay.
It was built on the legacy of this earlier effort to be this world-class spa. Now, 10 years later, it went under. And the train, Southern Pacific, no longer ran through Asheville. So that history kind of died with that. But anyway, so there's so many stories behind what you find today, and those lithium. Mm-hmm. Fountains have, you know, a long history.
They do indeed. Yeah, Lithia water. Try it once. I think we can recommend it just about anybody. Just so you know for yourself. There are some people I know who said, I kind of like it. I believe in what it can do for me, whatever that is. Barbara Cervone's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Postcards from the Rogue Valley is the blog she started now out in book form with gorgeous color photographs and descriptions of life here and now and then in the Rogue Valley. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the conversation by phone. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. To the point of the things that draw people to Ashland, I mean, it was mineral baths more than a century ago. It's Shakespeare these days. To the point of the recent experiences, how much do you miss tourists with the crowds dissipated by the pandemic?
Yeah. I don't miss them personally because I don't have a livelihood that's dependent upon them. But as I go through town, I feel the pain of economic pain and dislocation. The pandemic was, and the smoke beforehand was enough to be starting to dim the lights a bit. And then the pandemic on top of it means that, there's a lot of struggle going on in this town. And it's, I think about it, I was here the other night with the holiday lights, just look so festive and gorgeous. But feeling like, as you pass an empty storefront, you're wondering how Ashland will, I don't think it's just getting back to where it once was and the tourists who came for reasons that were, popular then. I think that there may be a need for the town to re-envision what makes it special. And certainly the Oregon Shakespeare Festival makes it special, but that's not all, and there's so much more that I think can be captured and developed.
In addition to writing and photographing about the Ashland area, have you gotten involved civically in any way? Have you thought about things like, school board or city council, planning commission?
I've actually been sort of asked to be on some of those boards, but I haven't. But I have, in fact, gotten involved in a variety of nonprofit organizations. This book itself, I'm donating all the proceeds to Rogue Valley Farm to School, which is a really important resource in the valley for linking kids to knowing where their food comes from, but in particular for helping kids whose families are, for whom food is scarce. I deliver feral cats around the valley to barns that are looking for someone to do rodent patrol for them. That's through Jackson County Animal Shelter. And actually, that's a role that I love because it takes me to places in the valley that I would never get to. Mm-hmm. I was at the end of some dirt road.
And dropping off a cat for the barn.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I've been involved with my interest in looking at the swimming history in this town, the natatorium and twin plunges. And I happen to know the gentleman, Al, who was the founder of the twin plunges. And mm-hmm. So that's gotten me involved in the efforts to rebuild the Daniel Meyer pool in town.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, there are various things here and there that attract my passions or interests.
We talked about the smoke being bad when you first got here. You actually moved here in one of the worst smoke years of recent times, 2018, and that hasn't dimmed your passion, or has it? I mean, you lived through the month that the rest of us had in the Ashland area this year.
Yeah, I mean, it is this thing where my husband and I in particular say, geez, we moved here, we uprooted our life. And now the summers are so complicated and difficult. You have to have hope, I guess, in the end of the day. I mean, I feel that all the time. And as much as climate change and wildfire and smoke knock on our door, it's not a reason to leave here. There's certainly enough grace here to keep, I think, anyone around, including us.
Well, let's go from smoke to fire then. You write in your narrative about the Almeda Drive fire of an avenging arsonist starting it. Do you know something the police have not announced yet?
Oh, I think I may have taken, I don't know is the answer to that.
Okay. Artistic license?
Right.
So we'd be having a very different conversation if the ignition point for the fire had been just a couple of miles further along the freeway toward the mountains. I mean, we've run stories about people leaving because their homes burned or for fear their homes will burn or because of the smoke, which of course was bad this year. I mean, so have you and Tony had some conversations along those lines?
Yeah, well, so we live right at the base of the Ords and Todd Woods, and we hike them every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, they clearly, as much as they've been doing forest resiliency, small burns, it looks like a powder keg just waiting to explode.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel, you know, as you say, the fire could have been in the mountains, and there we would have been fleeing. But we left this August. We took a road trip and went drove the other direction across the country to Brooklyn. And when we were leaving, I was thinking, what if the house isn't here when we get back? And we had someone living in it, but that's not the same as being there to sort of pack things up or whatever else. And so the only thing I could think of doing was I got one bag that had our sort of most important papers in it, and then I took pictures of everything. I just went around the house, they photographing everything just so that I would have that memory. So it felt very real. I mean, mm-hmm. the idea that you might be leaving and never see what you've lost was chilling.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have had that experience with the Almeda Drive fire, and of course the others that burned around the same time throughout the region. But you know, it's weird to think about the fact that those fires, the September fires of 2020, came during the retreat from COVID. Talk about the kinds of things you've learned about the region from the presence of COVID and the response to it.
Oh boy. I mean, it's interesting because my husband and I, we do travel a lot, and so we see how things are happening elsewhere in the country, too, around COVID, whether it's, you know, Yellowstone Park or Phoenix, Arizona. And here, I feel like it's a mixed bag. I mean, again, I remember seeing walking around town, actually, with my camera when things had shut down back in, was that March?
March of 2020, yeah.
Right. And, you know, and OSF had its closed sign sort of indefinitely at the window. And so it seemed surreal, and it seemed as though, you know, everyone, for good reason, had retreated, and, you know, the streets were kind of empty. And I feel like that the town has been, you know, really careful in its returning, trying to find, you know, a normal place, a familiar place to be. So I'm encouraged by that. You know, it's as someone who falls on the side of believing in vaccinations, it's still a struggle to see those who don't. In fact, I passed a demonstration yesterday on Siskiyou Boulevard with people fighting against the notion of vaccination. And so, you know, you want the place that you live to sort of reflect your priorities or your values, but no place is ever going to really do that. So I feel like, you know, Ashland has a healthy regard for what's important with this, but that doesn't mean that everyone is going to line up behind it.
No, it's not a monoculture in that sense.
Right.
No. Yeah. And speaking of values, I have enough time to broach the subject of the Say Their Names Memorial, which you put in a picture
right.
in the book. And as you pointed out, Oregon has a long racist history, racist generally against the black people, but Chinese people as well. But
right.
in this case, we're talking about the Say Their Names Memorial. So tell the story of its vanishing and its reappearing, because this is a really interesting thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was perplexed when I first heard the story, and it sounded as though it had been vandalized, but the vandals were saying no. The people who put it up sort of decided it was time for it to come down, but certainly they didn't mean to bring it down with such disarray. So I'm not surprised again that that would happen here. And it's the same kind of, you see this across the country, so it's not a, Ashen doesn't stand out for what it may, for some of us residents feeling about the Black Lives Matter effort. But, I mean, I was one of the people who helped, you know, create something to go back up on that fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, to me, it elevates Ashland bit from that notion of being, you know, a whites-only place. I mean, I have old photographs that I found
yes.
online that have in Ashland, you know.
Klan marches and everything, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think that, I think that Ashland's doing, you know, its best around having those discussions about why race matters.
It's again interesting to get the perspective of somebody who was a recent transplant to the area. Barbara Cervone moved into the Rogue Valley from Brooklyn with her husband Tony in 2018, began a blog called Postcards from the Rogue Valley, which is now out in softcover book form with some gorgeous pictures and some text to accompany it. Barbara, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Take care.